You're listening to The Shot Podcast, presented by Grey Goose Vodka. Whether it's a dinner party for 10 or a small kickback, you know the vibes will always be right if you're surrounded by your favorite people. And great company pairs best with a great cocktail. So make it a Grey Goose Martini cocktail. Impress your guests in style with an espresso martini or the always effortless classic martini with a lemon twist. No matter what you decide, everyone can appreciate the smooth, delicate taste that only a Grey Goose Vodka Martini can provide. For more info on how to craft a vodka-based cocktail, visit greygoose.com and remember to always sip responsibly. Paul Rivera here. On this episode of The Shop, myself and Mav got the chance to sit with Michael Rubin.
Meek said to me, hey, can you come to court? I want you to see what happens when a black person goes to court.
Devontae Adams.
In our business, we don't get to choose everybody, but the people that I do get to choose, I'm gonna make sure I choose wisely.
Tiffany Haddish.
Life is all about the numbers. Numbers don't lie unless you don't know how to put them together.
And the CEO of the New England Patriots, Robert Kraft.
We paid the highest price in any league, and it was losing money.
Check it out.
You know, Robert is going to live to 120. I'm going to make sure he's going out
how
the same
you know?
Way. I'm going to make sure he's going out the same way he is today. Then we're going to keep him out till 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning.
I really think I'm 35. But I'm 82
when you mature
and
so much, 35. I thought you were 25.
Yeah.
He's getting old. No, I mean, honestly, you kind of act 25.
I used to be 27, 28. And then I met you, and you exposed me to things in life that I grew up and I was 35.
Let me ask this. How'd you guys meet?
Yeah.
And what was your initial thought?
I met Robert from his oldest son, who's one of my best friends, Jonathan Kraft. And what was amazing for me is meeting him the first time, he had literally the heart of a kid. You know, Robert's always just had the mentality of pushing in everything that he does, and I love that. And so I like to get people around me that I can learn from, grow from, take value from in how I'm, you know, growing my own life. And, you know, he's been, you know, for me, he's been one of my best role models, but also brothers. And, you know, people say to me all the time, like, how are you guys so close? Because there's such an age difference. And, you know, of course, him at 35, I feel like I'm 21, of course. But, you know, we have so much fun together.
Robert, you always been like that, like to go out and have a good time?
Absolutely.
That's it. By the way, I got to tell you, I don't know how you all feel. This man is what we all strive to be.
Oh.
Still having a good time with life, doing amazing work.
Still competing at the highest level.
Still competing at the highest level.
Still having fun, man.
Still having fun.
Like,
what's the secret? You got to tell us what the secret is.
You know, when we're starting out on a modest basis, all of us, and sometimes you'll have people around you who will be very talented, and they help you win at whatever winning is, and you put up with it. But what I learned is if they aren't good people at the core, people of integrity, people you can trust, they're going to get you distracted and into trouble some way.
Totally. Michael, Robert talked about something very important about, like, people who can help you win because they're smart, they're talented, they're great, they're whatever, and then measuring that against a great person. Like, they have great
character and integrity.
Character and integrity. If you nail both, that's the holy grail, obviously. We all strive, whether it's your agent, your the coach, but you run now a massive company and have hired thousands of people. When you're going to interview someone, if you find someone who is really fucking good, like, damn, this guy or this woman is smart as fuck, but I'm getting some word, some feedback from people that they don't always have the best character. How do you balance that? How do you think about it? Do you just cut them off? What do you do?
I'm not hiring the person. I mean,
you're just done, no matter how good they are.
So let me say this. I believe when you go to hire someone, put someone in your, you know, kind of close inner circle, there's what you think when you meet that person and interview the hell out of them. But then there's the back door. I've never asked someone for a reference in my life. And you know this about me. How many times have I called you and said, hey, Mav, what do you think about this person?
Yes, yes.
Okay. How many times
every
have
week,
I,
we're
how many times time, have I yes. called you and said, Mav, what do you think about this person? And talk about a guy we just hired last week. I called 30 different people about that person because I wanted to make sure if I was going to bring someone in to be a top executive for me, that I really knew everything about them. And so I'm really thorough and diligent on the backdoor referencing. When someone says to me, like, hey, do you want me to give you some references? I'm kind of offended by that. You think I'd be so fucking stupid that I would take the references,
your references
that you would give me? Because, by the way, if someone said to me, hey, Can you tell me five people to check? I'm calling each of the five people and saying, here's what I want you to say.
And for you guys, it's different, right? Because they're talking about hiring. For you guys, it's bringing people into your inner circle that are going to help manage and grow your career.
That's
and
hiring too.
Yeah, so, so how do you guys think of that as well? Like saying,
I ask a lot of questions. I ask them a lot of questions. And then like he said, like I call people that they say they've worked for or whatever or worked with. And then I call people that those people work with that had to deal with them. Like, and I ask a lot of questions. Like, they might have built some really great careers, but are they, like, will they be able to handle me? Will they be able to communicate with me? Like, when I'm having a bad day, when I'm dealing with my endometriosis and I'm feeling like jumping off the damn building, will they be able to calm me down and help me do my job? Because I'm over here a bag of emotions.
Have you ever thought you got the right person, Tiffany, and realized, shit, I fucked this up?
Yeah.
And did you react? Did you make the change fast or did you wait?
I waited because I didn't know what to do.
You know you got something wrong. It's like a cancer. Rip it the fuck out of your body. Period. End of story.
And it hurts
fast.
And it hurts
Me. And the reason for that is the opportunity cost of the messes they're going to create 100%. That's going to distract you from doing what you want to do.
You know the other big thing I've learned?
We dealt with that in our company.
For sure.
Big thing I've learned too. Someone could be perfect for you today, and in 2 years, maybe they're not. Because your life changes, you grow, your situation changes, so you need people that can kill with you. And by the way, who you put around you is everything.
Yes.
Yeah, and for me, like, I'm the type of person, like, I can barely feel comfortable taking a movie reference from somebody without, you know what I mean? Like, because your standards and what you become accustomed to, you know, what you think is acceptable may be different than me. So you may think that somebody does a diligent enough job, you know, in their job, whether they work for you, you know, they help you build a business or whatever it is. What works for you may not work for me. So I got to be able to see that myself.
In your sport, in your profession, you have to go to work. A very intimate job, right? Because you're in the locker room, you're on the bus, you're on travel. It's even different than being in, because you like spend more time with those people than your family.
Yeah.
And you don't get to pick any of those people. They're the people that get sent
the
in.
The difference, I guess more what I'm thinking about is more my management. The people
that work with you. Yeah. Yes.
Run my marketing, you know, my agent and all of that. Like, you know, for me, it's simple. The guy you seen in here a minute ago, Nick, he does most of my marketing stuff. I've been knowing him since middle school, so like I don't need a reference. That's somebody I know literally every single thing about this man. Like he needed it, like the way he acts day to day is what proves to me that he's the right guy. So I like to be around the people that, you know, I have those, if you're working for me or if you're in my inner circle like that, like you're really in my inner circle.
Can I ask you a question though? Cause this happens with us getting players and the role of agents. And agents really, they want to get you a good financial deal and as much as they can, because they want to use that, then attract other players to them for the—
Correct.
But agents have to be managed because you might go, because they want to get a big, they take whatever percent it is,
100%.
And then they want to use your contract as a way, rather than doing what's right for you personally. Do you think I'm wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. I think that athletes have built that problem themselves because there's such a high percentage of guys out there that just give the people that manage them the POA to, whether it's dealing with their financials, you know, their contract situations, whatever. And, you know, the agent may want you in a different situation personally for him because it works out better with him, you know, if you were to go to Arizona or something, you know, based off of that, you may make more money in that contract, whereas you're looking for happiness and you want to be in a certain place. And if you don't have that same trust with that agent, he may come to you with information that isn't correct. So for me, I just make sure I manage that throughout the way. Like my financial advisor, he knows I'm interested in what's going on with me. I'm not going to be just sitting back letting you pay bills and do all that stuff. I need to know, and I want to learn about anything that I don't know.
I was going to ask, that factors into your decision-making in terms of it's not just a bag, not just the biggest contract. It's, you know, Robert was talking about happiness, you know, what's important to you.
Yeah, we were talking earlier, you were saying you want to play with guys you actually like you like to hang with.
100%.
He was saying, like, he can't You were saying you don't even know how to deal with somebody who's not cool and like you can get on with them.
Yeah, I gotta be able to vibe with you. That's such a critical piece to me being around you. And unfortunately, in our sport or in our business, we don't get to choose everybody. But the people that I do get to choose, I'm gonna make sure I choose wisely.
Of course.
That's my idea. Is always trying to be calculated with that. That way. And the other thing is you letting other people know what you're about too, because then people, they'll tread lightly knowing that if your financial advisor just says, okay, my guy just lets me do whatever and he never checks up on what's going on, they're more inclined to steal from you and do other things and take advantage of you. But if they know that you're a smart guy and you're on top of those type of things, then, you know, they kind of move a little different, I've noticed.
The people around you is everything.
Everything.
And I'll tell you, if there's one thing I've learned in the last several years, I can look at somebody and look at the people they have around them and determine how they're gonna do in the future. It's one of the things I've said to you so many times about Bron. Bron would be Bron on the court because of him, but I look at how he's had you, Rich Paul, Paul Wachter, and that's been his group. And I look at the three of you guys, I'm like, okay, this guy picked a hell of a team.
My grandmother used to always say that. You show me a person, show me their first five friends, I'll tell you everything about them. How far they're gonna go, what they're gonna be, and to your—
Completely
you can't,
right.
You also need people who have different skill set than you, different thinking than you, different way of being than you, because you need someone to, because I believe, and at our company, we always say, if you wanna get to the best idea, you actually need discourse. Sometimes you call me and I go, Michael, I don't know about that, I disagree with that. And you go, Mav, I think you're wrong. And we have that discussion.
Of course.
And that's how we get to, like, you make me see it a different way, or I make you see it a different way. Like, I didn't think about it that way. Devontae, I think you're the best in the league at your position, one of the greats to ever do it, but you talked about always being a student of the game, always learning. Will you ever get to the point where you're not learning how to be, because you look like you don't got anything else to learn playing wide receiver, from the slot, out wide, anywhere.
That's definitely not true, and that's never the mentality that anybody should ever have, let alone me. Like, I got, I'm learning something new. Like, the thing is, you can learn in so many different ways. Like, I learned from new guys. Like, I learned from Jacoby this year, like, so much that I didn't know before. Like,
wow.
You shouldn't have let him go.
I was going to get to that, but I ain't going to say that. I appreciate you, though. He was basically, like, the best kept secret, like, in the league for me, because I've seen a lot of guys. I watch tape of dudes, like, I watch Richie James tape, like, guys that people know and respect, but not as far as, like,
superstars.
You know, you would think I'd be watching, you know, Jets all day. Like, I love watching his tape, but, you know, I'd be watching the third guy if I like what he does. So for me,
what is like one thing Jacoby taught you that you didn't know?
It's not really about the teach, because he's one of the most quiet human beings I've ever been around. Like, some people get, they so quiet to where it's uncomfortable. If he wasn't so cool of a person, it would be there. So he's not gonna be like, hey, Tate, like, try this or that. But just like certain small things, like within his routes, he's not the fastest guy in the world. So he's really good at changing. Like, he can move within his routes, change a pace while he's running full speed is something, probably one of the best that I've seen so far. Like, we got a route called a read it route where you dive in, get back vertical, and then based off the leverage of the guy defending you, you either break it across this way or go across this way. And the way he just set people up, like, you almost just, like, it's like watching basketball. Like, people tell me that all the time,
yeah,
but I
you
feel
play,
like
yeah, yeah,
he saying. Looks more like he's playing basketball on the football.
So you would watch him and then be like, oh shit, I'm doing that.
Hell yeah.
That's your personality.
That's just your smart guy. Yeah.
I always say, I'm a sponge. Like, that's how I learned everything.
Yep.
I barely made out of high school. I went to college for part of one semester. Everything I learned.
You only went to college, right, because your dad gave you some money?
Because I ran out of money and running a ski shop in my teens. And my dad said, I need to borrow $38,000. He said, only if you agree to go to college. And so I made a deal with the devil.
He said, yes,
I'm in.
Went
to college for part of a semester.
You picked the college? You never said how long?
I said, fuck this, 3 weeks, I'm paying the shit off and I'm out. But all seriousness, like, for me, I love that mentality you have that says, I'm always gonna learn from who, it doesn't matter who it is, it's just, you're gonna be learning every day from people around you. By the way, sometimes you learn shit not to do too. Like,
yeah, of course, equal is important. Like,
that's some fucked up shit, I ain't doing that.
And yeah, so, but I'll tell you, I mean, I've had the privilege of being in the league, NFL, for 30 years, three decades. The fact that a guy of your caliber is open to learning from anyone that's unusual, and says something about the quality of person you are. So that's a great credit to you.
That's amazing. And Bob, it's a credit to you. You bought a football team when you were 5. That's pretty crazy. I mean, you were 5 years old when you bought the
Patriots. 30 years.
30 years. Yeah. He bought it. He was like a...
Well, some people thought I was precocious for a 5-year-old. But not only that, well, it shows I didn't have economic sense because... We paid the highest price ever paid for any sports franchise anywhere in the world, in any league, and it was losing money. So
that worked out okay for whoever. I do want to get back to learning from, you know, peers and other people. Do you still feel, is that something you do when
every
you're on
day,
set, learning from other actors?
Day, I learn from other actors. I learn from businessmen. Like, I love when you invite me to your events. The first 2 hours that I'm there, I'm walking around trying to figure out who make money, how they make money.
They
can
all
you
make
teach
money,
me how
by
to
like,
I know, that's why it's the best party question. Ever.
I mean, you and Robert Kraft last year, you guys were a dancing combination. I mean, I thought you guys were going on Dancing with the Stars.
But, like, at your event, the white party that we went to for 4th of July, I spent hours walking around talking to people, finding out what they did for a living, met a bunch of team owners, I met investors, I met lawyers, doctors, all this cool stuff. It was funny because Dr. Oz was like, oh no, you need to talk to this guy over here if you want to be, because I have my little tech company that I'm growing in Africa and I want to be the best business owner
possible. What does that do?
It does a lot. So we do stuff on, basically we have our own stock exchange. It's called the Bizio, and we have our own stock exchange. But then we have our own platform here in America where it's black owned too. So we do our own Zoom. We help businesses, small businesses, get on the stock exchange. We put them in conglomerates. But also you can run everything, your entire business, your POS system, everything from the Bizio.
But Tiffany, to also talk about, you had an amazing moment, obviously girls trip, your career took off, like it exploded. How was that, managing that, A? And then obviously it came with a lot of envy. People like, how does she get this? How does she get that?
Well, managing it was, I don't know. I just enjoy every moment of it. I just try to have fun in every moment. I know it's a lot of jealousy. I know it's a lot of people like, how she get to be herself everywhere she go? Why she get to act like that? But it's like, I'm not putting on airs. I'm not pretending. I'm being who I am. I pretend. They pay me millions of dollars to pretend on camera. I can be very serious and dramatic and very professional with all this coof and whatever. But my real self is like, let's have fun. Let's turn up, whatever. I mean, I could be a gangster too. You know, I could be a police officer. I could be all these different things. But who I am is who I am. And I mean, I think I've always had people jealous of me. I just never paid them any attention.
Does it hurt you when you see people jealous of you and you're like, I'm just being me? Or do you like, fuck them, I'm moving like, oh yeah, I'm not.
I'm kind of,
how do you feel? You feel
I don't see that bothering you at all. I don't see that bothering you at all.
Like, no, I feel really honored. For it. And I give them love. I give them.
I want you to read this. This is a card I had made up.
Jealousy and envy are incurable diseases, and it's the one time it is better to be a recipient than a donor.
Wow. Bob, do you hand those out at the owners' meetings?
Well, no.
After six Super Bowls.
I love it.
That's what we call an RKKism, because once you've established, and all of you are in that category, that...
Can I keep this?
Yeah, it's yours.
It's mine. I need this.
Well, he only had one copy, too. That's a pretty special moment.
I have 20 or 30, but I just carry one in my pocket just for moments like this.
Thank you. Let
me ask the room, what keeps you all going, right? Because once you get to the bag and Pro Bowls and Super Bowl rings and, you know, building an incredible company and, you know, incredible career, what keeps you waking up every day and operating as if you don't have any of that?
You know, for me, it's an obsession. It's the only thing I'm good at.
But like, what are you obsessed with? What thing?
I'm obsessed with the action of the game of building my business. Like, I grew up, I was always, like, a horrible athlete. I was the last guy to get picked in every team. I was that bad of an athlete. I was a terrible student. So, like, to me, I'm thriving in business, and I love it, and it's intoxicating. You just, like, I want more of it all the time. It's almost like now...
Well, but he's also off the charts. He is...
But I
unique and special.
But it's so fun to have a vision for something and go after it with everything you got And sometimes you get W's, sometimes you get L's, but you keep getting to play of the game. So for me, I feel like actually being really talented as a business leader, that allows you, to kind of do what you do as hard as you want, as long as you want. I'll do this. People think I'm nuts. I literally work 18 hours a day, 350 days a year. And I'm going to keep doing it until I die. And it's like, it keeps me young. It keeps me vibrant. It's fun to me. So like, I'm obsessed with it. It's like legitimately an obsession. What I need to try to do is just balance being a little bit normal sometimes. Like, can you just put your phone down for a meal? Can you, try to just concentrate and not be so obsessed where like you just want action, action, action every second. But, flip side is I just love it. And so like, I'm honored to do it.
That's dope.
Let me ask you this, just to build off of that, when would you say the point was when you decided you were gonna make your brand, because I know your brand is obviously the Fanatics thing and the corporate, like the normal side of how the corporate, setting is, but the way you guys have made you kind of went against the mold and it's not, it's a different approach to it.
When did you decide there's Fanatics and then there's Michael Rubin, which is one and the same, but it feels like it's been a conscious effort from you, Michael?
Not at all a conscious effort. I'd say for me, I think I'm just always me. I don't give a shit what people think. I just want to always do what I think is right. And let's keep this real. Most big CEOs, most financially successful people are like, they're not fun. They're boring.
They're boring.
They're people I don't want. Robert and I talk about this all the time. We're like, hey, do you want to do this with me? Like, I'm like, no, this will be boring as shit. No, I'm not. Like, I want to like love
that's
doing
mostly
what I'm
him
doing.
Saying that to
right.
me.
I agree. But am I right a lot of times?
You're right most of the time.
Right.
And do you think that's good on your company? And do you think there's ever a point where you can't do that, Michael? Or can you do that? You're always going to be that, right?
Look, there are times I get told, like, Michael, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah. And then we talked about your Halloween costume that you posted.
Which was amazing. So
you know what he did,
which
right?
One, which one was this one?
So Mounjaro is the weight loss drug. It's taken me from a fat, pudgy kid down to 150-pound swell individual. And so Will Mack was my boy. Will and I wore Mounjaro. It's the shot that you take. So we wore a Mounjaro
costume.
As the costume. And by the way, we're walking down New York City and people are fucking dying. Like, and people knew it was me too. Like, there is Michael Rubin in a shot of Mounjaro. Like, who would possibly wear this? But to me, it's almost like my self-deprecating. I don't want to take credit from going from 210 pounds to 150 pounds.
By the way, I love that. That's my favorite part about you.
I want people to know, I took that goddamn shot. It's amazing.
Yes.
And by the way, if you're chubby, you should take it too.
Yes.
So, Matt, by the way, we should talk to you about that. just messing with you.
Yo, coming on, he said to me, by the way, he goes, Matt, if you're boring, you're not nearly as fun as you used to be. I said, Michael, you're also skinny. You're not nearly as fat as you used to be. People change.
One of the main goals for each episode of The Shop is to share and learn from the unique experiences of all our guests as we curate conversations with those who are shaping culture. What I've learned is that through the journey, all the hard work, the hustle, and the consistency, it's always important to celebrate your wins. So do it in style and raise a glass to toast the unforgettable moments that continue to make us who we are. Toast to your wins with a Grey Goose Martini cocktail. Check out greygoose.com for smooth-tasting recipes. And remember, sip responsibly. The Shop podcast is presented by Grey Goose Vodka.
Tiffany, you ever found yourself in places in Hollywood going for roles where you're like, it's going to be hard to be myself in this room? And how do you balance that? How do you do it?
Yeah, I've walked into certain places and been like, ooh, this is not my crowd. Oh, well, they're going to have to learn how to deal with the Haddish today. And I like warm them up. I don't just like, just bam, here it is. I'm warm them up a little bit. Figure out who's into me, who knows who I am. Mostly everybody knows who I am. So then I just start, being me.
And I just want to know who won't be into you. Like, I mean, you light up any room.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. What type of room would not be a Tiffany Haddish room?
Nobody.
Ooh. Should I say that?
Say whatever you want.
It's the Shop.
Be you. It's the Shop. We say whatever the fuck.
Well,
we say whatever the fuck we want.
I feel like a room full of...
I know what you're thinking.
What am I thinking? What do you think?
Go.
A room full of...
Some old, boring-ass white people.
No, that's my best rooms. Those are my best rooms. You got to remember, I did Bar and Bat Mitzvahs for 11 years. I know how to work that room. I know how to get everybody active. I was an energy producer. That's my job. I produce amazing energy.
That's what you did today.
That's what I do every day, though. Like, I step into an environment, I know how to, like, make it move. But, like, I did a thing for police officers, and I was like, uh-oh, you know, like, and they were kind of, like, not really in the mood. And then I got to talking to this one, talking to that one, bam, lit up. I've walked into rooms with all actresses that are, you know, saying, this isn't this, this isn't that, you know, and I'm like, why aren't, if we just band together, guys, we could do this. And they're like, shut up, Tiffany, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what you're, you don't understand the system. And I'm like, well, I see the female soccer players. I saw how they banded together. They came together. They said, this is what we need. This is what we're going to do. And we're not going to work till this. And then things changed. So if we just came together, stop being out here complaining, blah, 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 blah. Like, just sit down. Life is all about the numbers, proving this is what, look, this how many movies I did. This how much money these movies made. This how many followers I got. This is how many products I've sold that I don't even own. But as soon as I say something about it, this is what the numbers do. Like, I collect, I'm a big data collect information. I will pay somebody to go get the information for me. Bring me back them numbers, because I can go to these people that are going to pay me to be in this program, to do this thing or whatever, and go, these are the numbers. Numbers don't lie. That's the one thing that don't lie is numbers, unless you don't know how to put them together.
For sure, for sure. Well, you just hired a new coach. 24 years, the same coach, right? Wasn't Belichick 24
exactly.
seasons?
Exactly. Almost a quarter of a century.
Quarter of a century. Making that transition, like, you've had to do hires. Like, take us through that. How hard was it to, like, shit, I got to think about somebody, A. And then B, his successor is a guy who you've, I think, known for a long time, who was there. Did you even consider anyone else, or were you like, I got my next guy right here?
I had a chance to view Gerard Mayo when he got drafted by us. And he then, in his second year, he got elected captain for 7 years with a lot of veterans around voting for him. And every year, I've taken 27 missions of players to the Holy Land. And
can you take me next time if you got some single players?
Most of them are single.
Hello.
Yeah. But we had a situation where there were about 15 or 18 players. And I watched how Gerard worked with them. And I said, that's my next head coach.
Wow. Robert, can I ask you?
And I just want to explain why. Because, you know, as you see players, how long have you been in the league?
10, going on 11.
All right. Well, in the last decade, the players coming in the locker room are different than when you came in.
100%. I say it all the time.
Okay. So how you relate to them, how you connect. We're the ultimate team sport. You can get paid and be number one, but in the end, if you want to win, you're putting team first, and you need guys around you who do that. And this guy did it, and I think he can relate to young people today.
Bob, in your mind, what is the head coach of an NFL football team's first, second, third responsibilities? Like, do they need to be the most tactical, draw the best plays? Do they need to be, you know, be able to relate? What is the thing that you look
for? Well, for me,
that makes a great coach.
I think someone that all the players can relate to and feel are doing that. And then you need the tactical skills. You need the game plan. You need all the other things that need to be done. But if they can't relate to the players, I don't know. Yeah, you correct me. What do you think?
The head coach's first job.
I completely agree. I think first off, you have to be able to lead men. Like, you know, you are the
captain
of the
team. What does that mean? I hear a lot of players say that. What does that actually mean?
Tell me.
To be able to lead men. You might need to ask her. I don't know. She might have a better answer for
me. She gives the energy. No, the way she brings energy to a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You need the head coach
captivating
to do that and get people pumped up.
Yeah,
I want to be with around her. I want to be part of this.
Sometimes that, like, I'm not a big, like, the coach. It was the coach. That's why the season was so horrible. It was just the coach. But sometimes in order for the team, the set players that you have in the locker room to realize and fulfill their full potential, you need somebody that they are willing to play for. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you've seen a difference. And I love Josh McDaniels. Like, I personally, I was an advocate for him the whole time. And obviously, it came a point where it was clear that a change needed to be made. you know, similar to the Patriots situation. But, you know, I always backed him, but it was just different once we had made the change and AP was in there, having a guy that you don't necessarily have to play the game, but having played the game, you know, you can kind of understand it different, and we can, you know, you can sympathize with the players, the way you talk to them, you know, whether it's the verbiage or the understanding that you approach your players with, you've seen that with AP immediately. So when you have guys that have lived it a little bit, you can unlock a little bit of something with a few players where you think that you need a new, you know, end or a middle backer, whereas you might need a new coach in there that can really make that guy really do what he's supposed to do to play like the player he's supposed to be. And then that happened with a lot of guys. Like, you thought that we needed to fill some gaps on defense, and maybe we could have in a few spots, but a couple guys started showing up out of nowhere, and we looked like one of the best defenses in the league.
Of course, you know, and that was because of the leadership he brought.
It's a piece of that for sure.
Speaking of AP, what did it feel like going through that process? Because it looked different from a fan standpoint, how you guys rallied around him.
Yeah.
I saw one of the players famously said, if he's out, I'm out, right?
Yeah.
And I thought...
Yeah, who said that?
That was Max.
Yeah.
Max. We was all kind of on the same, you know, mental with that because, and for me, like, and I know the Patriot way, like, these men go and hoist that trophy every other year, so they've really experienced real winning. So for me, like, I've never been a cigar in the locker room guy, like, you know, unless it's a Super Bowl. I haven't won one, but that's my idea of when that's the right time to do that. And, you know, we got a lot of backlash for the way that we were celebrating some of the wins on the back half of the season. And, you know, from the outside, maybe I would be saying the same thing, but being in that locker room and being a part of what we went through this year, unless you were in there and understood, then you maybe just won't get it. And you'll think that it's kind of crazy and we celebrating too soon and all of that. I was in the videos with him, and normally I'll be trying to hide to stay away from that stuff. I'm like, man, F that. Like, we deserve this because this is a new season for us right now. And right now we're doing pretty damn good.
So. The nuance of what you said, you know, you didn't think you shouldn't celebrate like that, but what you've all go through in terms of the hard work and the physical part of everything, you're willing to do it when you got the right leadership.
Right.
I mean, that's
correct.
Because you feel it differently, right?
Yeah, you see, like, somebody put, you know, the internet is undefeated. You go on Twitter, the game that we won, we beat the Giants the week after our last win. I think when we played the Patriots, you look at the locker room, how we looked in that locker room, in the locker, like, it was like a picture of Josh talking to the team after we won, and you see probably like 10 players, and everybody just kind of like, and then you see the next week when we beat the Giants, like, it looked like it was
relax, it was the Giants.
It was unlocked.
Everybody.
Relax, I said the Patriots.
So, by the way, what we're talking about with the Raiders now, and with the Patriots, two black head coaches, which is always a topic of conversation.
Five in the league, no?
Is there five?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Five in the league is always a topic of conversation, which I always think, I actually, maybe I'm naive, I believe, like, I know you for sure. You're going for the best person for the
for
job.
Me.
Right?
I want to win.
You want to win. I think people want to win. Maybe I'm naive, but... Is there a sense amongst the players like, oh, shit, our new coach is black, this is different? Was there any conversation with the players about that?
You know, I think just the, this is just the, we being honest, I think that depending on the location of the team makes that a bigger deal.
What do you mean?
Like, a black head coach on the Patriots is going to be much bigger, in my mind at least, than... putting a black head coach on the Raiders as far as the way it's perceived. And the same would go for Green Bay. I think that's just kind of the nature
of it.
It's not necessarily
that, that's
like...
That's actually nice you, that yeah. you say that.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think that's just the way that it is. Some of the teams are not... It's not looked at as, there's any racism attached to it or anything like that. No negative connotations, but it's more of like just the history that's been there, and you haven't really seen it happen that way before. And... the Raiders is just a little bit of a different type of team.
Well, they had the first ever black coach in the history of the league, the Raiders did, just Archell.
Yeah. Sure. Well, there you go.
You know, part of this whole thing I'm doing with Blue Square is to build bridges against hatred.
Yeah, and I saw what you did, obviously, with the ad in the Super Bowl, which I commend you. It was amazing to reach out, make that phone call, Talk about that, Bob. What made you feel like you wanted to do that and really?
Well, you know, I'm a little worried about what's going on in America. In 2017, after Charlottesville, seeing men dressed like Nazis holding signs saying, Jews won't replace us, blacks won't replace us. And, you know, we're trying to educate the American public that they can't be silent. They got to stand up to hate.
You know, we've been talking a lot about success, you know, this whole group has had in their main professions. I know something that's dear and dear to both your hearts, reform. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about that. What I want to, the point I want to discuss is why. Why is that important to you, right? Like, if I look at it at face value, it's like successful business, money, all these things. Why is reform important?
Wait, Michael, before you do that, Tiffany, we know you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
We love you. We appreciate you being
Thank
here.
Thank you.
We want you to do amazing things.
Because I got a show tonight
sure.
myself.
She's
going
to get ready for a show.
And they didn't line my back up, but that's okay. I'm keeping my back away from the cameras.
She's going to do a show. She's going to.
Yeah, I got a show.
Look amazing.
Thank
for
you.
Doing this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'll see y'all later.
So, for me, if I'm being completely blunt, I didn't really care about making a difference. Anytime someone would come to me before 2017, you hit me up and said, hey, you know, can you donate to my charity? I was always great at writing a check, but I never wanted to spend time because my mentality was, I work hard. If I'm successful financially, I can then help other people financially. And then, look, everyone knows the story when Robert's friend, all of our friends, when Meek went to prison for not committing a crime, what changed his life and my life, in a lot of ways, you know, probably millions of people's lives, was Meek said to me, hey, can you come to court? I want you to see what happens when a black person goes to court. And I never thought anything of it, but I'm like, hey, you really want me to come? I'll come. And watching a judge sentence him to prison for 2 to 4 years for popping a wheelie on a motorcycle, which was a traffic violation, like, as a white person coming from a middle-class family, I didn't believe that was possible. And so in the beginning, it was really only about how do we get him out of prison. And what happened was, my entrepreneurial instincts kicked in, and now I realize it's not just this one-off, crazy, fucked-up situation. It was really that this is the way Black America works, and that you had, you know, as I started looking into this and understanding it more, 25% of the people that go to prison and jail each year don't actually commit a crime. As a middle-class, you know, white person growing up, you believed everyone who went to prison was guilty.
Of course, yeah.
Like you said, hey, 99% of the people that go to prison, because you didn't believe actually 25% of the people going to prison or jail were for a technical violation. So I think in a lot of ways we were lucky. I think Meek, it was kind of his destiny to have that happen in front of me and me learn about the system. And then I, you know, said to Meek when he was in prison, hey man, when you get out, we got to start kind of an organization to fight this. And the amazing thing was, and this is what people don't understand, 2/3 of the people in the criminal justice population are actually on probation and parole, not in prison or jail. And so taking what happened to Meek and just setting the Reform Alliance up to change the probation and parole laws was like natural and instinctual. 5 years later, we've changed 18 laws in 11 states and created a pathway for over 800,000 people that shouldn't be on probation and parole to kind of exit the system. And that's something that's been incredibly rewarding. But I'll tell you, if I'm just being blunt, had I not lived it through Meek personally, I wouldn't have given a shit.
You wouldn't even know.
I wouldn't even know.
That's
just kind of like it was thrust upon us, and then it was our responsibility to do the right thing.
But Michael deserves a lot of credit for really spearheading this effort and leading it. And I'll tell you, just he really did something amazing here, and his friendship with Meek. Through him, I met Meek, and I was on vacation with Michael, and I guess Meek, we spoke with Meek, and Meek invited me. He was in jail. He said, come visit me. I mean, it's crazy. The system was really messed up, and so it changed my life and educated me to something that I wouldn't have believed.
Night, the night Robert came out of there, Robert called me like 5 times. And it went from like, before he saw it firsthand, why are you spending so much time on this, to that night, he called me like, why isn't Meek out of, why haven't you got Meek out of prison yet? I don't understand. Why is he not out of prison
yet? Meek told me that they changed things in the jail.
Oh, by the way, I've been to that prison 20 times. It never looked good. When Robert Kraft was coming, that shit was clear. It was like a different place.
I
was
he told me they painted the rooms.
No, I walked in like, I've been here 20 times. This place never looked like this before. It's like, it looked like a perfect, it looked like a nice place. But when Robert Kraft was coming, Michael Rubin goes, they didn't give a shit. I saw the normal prison. Robert Kraft comes, that prison looks spectacular.
No, and Meek told me that. And then I went out and there were like 20 members of the media. And I spoke out too with Michael. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
How did that make you guys feel? Because to see Meek in that situation and understand the country, and to your point, Michael, something you had no idea about, and I've heard you say a quote about this, to now understand people who come from a different environment than you guys, who didn't have the opportunity, because I've heard you say to a journalist, if I grew up in that environment, I would have been just maybe the biggest drug dealer ever.
The best.
And how did that make you change your thinking of like people from that, from where we all come from?
Yeah, look, my belief is a lot of people are a product of the environment that they're around. I was very fortunate to grow up in a, you know, very middle-class family and, you know, I think see the world from a positive lens. I say it all the time, and I'm serious when I say it. Had I grown up the way Meek grew up, I would have been an incredible drug dealer. And I would have been the best and the biggest at it, but that's probably what I would have done. Like, people think I'm fucking around when I say it, but my point is, like, you know, it's our responsibility to create opportunities for others. And one of the things I love doing is, you know, kind of all of us pushing each other up. And you know that about me. I'm a huge person. I'm like, we all got to push each other up. And like, you know, I'm always pushing him. He's pushing me. I'm pushing you. You're pushing me. Like, we all got to push each other
for sure
to be better. I think I'm fortunate to have grown up the way I did. And by the way, look, I grew up in a $42,000 house today that would probably cost $400,000 or $500,000. So I grew up, you know, very middle class. But I didn't grow up worrying about, am I going to be shot this day? Am I going to survive, you know, the neighborhood I live in? So for me, I think it's our responsibility to, you know, find ways to help others and bring people together. And that's what, you know, you talk about, like, I love building Fanatics as a CEO of Fanatics, but I get as much satisfaction out of what we're doing with the Reform Alliance or what we're now doing with Make-A-Wish or what we did when we did the All-In Challenge. Because, like, and look, you came through yesterday. I called you and said, hey, can you come through and help us with something we're doing with Make-A-Wish? And in 1 second, you're there. And like, watching those smiles and those kids' faces, it's pretty damn rewarding.
It's amazing.
You know?
Yeah. So,
like, we all know we're lucky as shit, so it is so our responsibility to give back.
Bob, I want to hear from you. You deserve, even though you're younger than all of us, actually, you're the most wise. Before last, I want to hear your point of view on this, Laz. How did that change how you see people from an environment that's different than you? You're around it a lot with the
Patriots. Yeah, I realized going to jail with Michael to visit Meek really changed me. I knew that black people were disadvantaged in certain ways. They're not giving, because Jewish people I know, their skin isn't black, but it's similar to discrimination. And so we do have core values. We got to stay with it, and we got to push back. This probation system is really messed up. I don't know who engineered it, but it's definitely geared to disadvantage black people, and it's not right.
I agree. Thank you, Bob. We'll see all everybody. Fanatics Promotions will all be at the white party coming up. That's what we'll all see. We'll do this again. We'll hang again.
You're listening to The Shot Podcast, presented by Grey Goose Vodka. Whether it's a dinner party for 10 or a small kickback, you know the vibes will always be right if you're surrounded by your favorite people. And great company pairs best with a great cocktail. So make it a Grey Goose Martini cocktail. Impress your guests in style with an espresso martini or the always effortless classic martini with a lemon twist. No matter what you decide, everyone can appreciate the smooth, delicate taste that only a Grey Goose vodka martini can provide. For more info on how to craft a vodka-based cocktail, visit greygoose.com and remember to always sip responsibly. Sip responsibly. www.responsibledrinking.org. 2024, Grey Goose. Its trade dress and the Geese device are trademarks. Imported by Grey Goose Importing Company, Coral Gables, Florida. Vodka, 40% alcohol by volume. Distilled from French wheat.